Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're plunging into, well, a really fascinating corner of physics.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at how things grow, how they change right at their edges.
It's a fundamental question, really.
Absolutely. And we're digging into a key paper here. Kardar, Parisi, and Zhang's 1986 work, the KPZ paper, as everyone calls it.
A real landmark.
Our mission today. To kind of uncover the hidden rules, you know, the universal patterns behind growth. Things like smoke plumes, crystal surfaces, even how biological tissues might expand.
Yeah, and you know, this KPZ paper was such a big deal because before it, scientists were really struggling.
Also,
well, you had all these complex growth patterns, clusters forming, solidification fronts moving, and understanding the fluctuations, the sort of dynamic roughness was incredibly hard.
Right, like trying to predict the exact shape of a snowflake as it grows.
Sort of, yeah. Right. There just wasn't a good systematic analytical way to handle it. The KPZ model was a massive breakthrough because it proposed this universal framework, a single idea to tackle all that diversity.
Okay, let's dive in then. When we say growing interfaces, what exactly are we talking about? Can you paint a picture? Give us some concrete examples.
Sure. Think of the interface as the active zone, the boundary layer where all the growth is actually happening.
That's frontier.
Exactly, the frontier. The paper mentions things like smoke aggregates those intricate branching shapes.
Okay.
Or colloid aggregates, similar idea. Flame fronts, you know, the edge of a fire spreading. Even things like tumor growth, unfortunately.
Oh, well, okay. That's quite a range.
It is. And also things like vapor deposition, how thin films are laid down atom by atom. And a classic model they reference is the Eden model.
The Eden model?
Yeah, it's a simple computer model where you just add cells one by one to the edge of a growing cluster. Simulates things like bacterial colony growth.
So wildly different physical process.
Completely different. But the key insight, the reason KPZ is so important, is that these diverse things often share surprisingly similar scaling properties, how their roughness develops over time or with size.
Like nature has a preferred way of getting rougher as it grows.
In a sense, yes. And the paper's goal was to find the simplest mathematical rule, a differential equation that could capture this universal behavior, guided by this idea of universality.
Right. And this is where it gets really interesting with the actual model.
Mm-hmm.
The core is this nonlinear Langevin equation, equation one in the paper. Now, Langevin equation, what does that mean for us here? And why is the nonlinear part the big deal?
Okay, so a Langevin equation fundamentally is just a way to describe something evolving over time when it's pushed around by both predictable forces and random noise.
Like a leaf blown by the wind, but also falling due to gravity.
That's a decent analogy, yeah. Predictable drift plus random kicks. Now, the nonlinear part in KPZ is the absolute game changer. Most simpler models were linear.
Meaning the forces were just proportional to, say, how steep the interface was.
Exactly. Simple relationship. But KPZ includes a term that depends on the square of the slope. That nonlinearity leads to much richer, more complex, and frankly more realistic behavior. It captures something essential about growth that the linear models missed.
Okay, so let's break down that equation. It has three main parts, right?
That's right. Just three key ingredients. The first is often called the surface tension term, represented by V.
V for viscosity, maybe?
Or velocity. Usually linked to surface tension or relaxation rate. Think of it as the force that tries to smooth things out. If you have a sharp peak, this term works to flatten it, makes the interface relax towards being smoother.
Okay, so V is the smoother outer, the tidying force. Then comes the star player, the nonlinear term with lambda. Why do we need that term? What's the intuition?
Right. This is the core KPZ insight. They argue it comes from the geometry of growth itself, especially lateral growth.
Lateral growth, meaning growing sideways, not just straight up.
Precisely. Imagine you're depositing material onto a surface, or cells are spreading out. If the surface is tilted where a new bit lands, that bit doesn't just add height vertically.
Ah, right. If it lands on a slope, it also pushes the boundary outwards a bit.
Exactly. And how much it effectively increases the height at that point depends on the slope squared, essentially. It's a geometric effect. Steeper slopes lead to a faster apparent vertical growth locally.
So the nonlinearity isn't just pulled out of thin air. It arises naturally from how things spread on an uneven surface.
That's the argument, yes. It captures how faster growing regions can sort of overhang or dominate slower ones. Without that lambda term, you just don't get the characteristic roughness, the unusual properties they talk about.
That makes a lot more sense. It's baked into the process. And the third term?
The third term is just noise. Ina, it represents all the random, unpredictable stuff happening, a particle landing here versus there, fluctuations in temperature, whatever.
The random kicks.
The random kicks, yeah. It's usually modeled as Gaussian noise, meaning it follows a bell curve distribution. But the cool thing is, for the universal properties, the exact type of noise often doesn't matter that much. It just needs to be random.
So smoothing, nonlinear growth from geometry, and random noise. That's the KPZ equation.
In a nutshell, yes.
But the real genius move, I think, was connecting this equation to other seemingly totally different areas of physics.
Absolutely. This is where the paper gets really powerful. They showed you could mathematically transform the KPZ equation into descriptions of two other, much better understood systems.
Which allows you to borrow tools and insights, right?
Exactly. It opens up whole new ways of thinking about the problem. The first mapping is to Berger's equation.
Berger's equation. That sounds familiar. Isn't that used in fluid dynamics? Like traffic flow?
That's the one. It describes things like shock waves in fluids or jams in traffic. And amazingly, the KPZ equation, if you ignore the noise term for a moment, its long-term behavior shows features that look just like these shock waves.
Shock waves in interface growth. What does that look like?
The paper gives these great visual examples. Think of the sharp layers you see in geological strata or in successive snowdrifts. These sharp fronts or steps are mathematically analogous to the shocks in Berger's equation. It suggests a deep connection between how fluids flow and how surfaces grow.
Wow. Geological layers and traffic jams, described by the same basic math as a growing crystal surface. That's pretty mind-bending.
It is. And it doesn't stop there.
There's another connection.
Yes. The second mapping is to the random directed polymer problem.
Okay, polymers, like long chain molecules.
Exactly. Imagine a long, flexible polymer chain trying to find the lowest energy path through a random landscape, like a disordered material. It's being pulled in one direction, but it has to wiggle through this random potential.
Okay, like finding the easiest route through a bumpy field.
Sort of, yes. The KPZ equation can be transformed into the equation describing the statistics of all possible paths that polymer could take. The interface height in KPZ maps onto the free energy, or the sum of probabilities, of the polymer configurations.
So the noise in KPZ becomes the random landscape the polymer moves through.
Precisely. This connection was incredibly fruitful, especially for numerical simulations. Studying these polymers turned out to be a very effective way to understand the KPZ exponents.
It's incredible. Fluid dynamics and polymer physics shedding light on growing surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
That really highlights the power of finding these hidden mathematical links.
It really does. It lets you attack the problem from multiple angles.
Now, the paper uses these dynamic renormalization group techniques to study the equation. Sounds heavy. What does that technique actually do for us? What are these scaling properties it reveals?
Right. Renormalization group, or RG, is a powerful theoretical tool. Think of it like mathematically zooming out.
Zooming out.
Yeah. You look at the system, average over the small scale details, and see how the effective rules change as you look at larger and larger scales. It helps you find what's universal, what properties persist, regardless of the microscopic specifics.
Like looking at a fractal. The small wiggles don't matter for the overall jaggedness.
That's a great analogy. RG helps us identify these key scaling properties, often described by exponents. For KPZ, the crucial ones are X, chi, and Z.
X and Z, what do they tell us?
Okay, so X tells you how the width or roughness of the interface, W, grows as the size of the system, L, increases. Like W scales as L to the power of X.
So bigger system, rougher interface, governed by X.
Right, and Z is the dynamic exponent. It relates time and space. It tells you how the roughness evolves over time, T, relative to the system size. Often you see relationships like W scaling with T to the power of XZ initially.
Got it. So X is static roughness scaling, Z is dynamic time scaling, and these numbers are like fingerprints.
Exactly. They define the universality class. Systems with the same X and Z behave the same way at large scales, even if they look totally different microscopically.
So what did KPZ predict for X and Z, and how did these predictions stack up against computer simulations, especially in different dimensions?
This is where the results get really concrete. For one dimension, like a line growing, they found exact values.
Exact. That's rare in physics.
It is. They found X equals 12 and Z equals 32. This comes from a special symmetry, a kind of fluctuation dissipation balance that only works perfectly in 1D.
In simulations.
The agreement was excellent. Previous simulations, like for the Eden model, had found Z to be around 1.5, 1.6, very close to 32. And other models, like ballistic deposition, gave X values near 0.5 and XZ near 13, again matching the theory beautifully.
Wow, okay, so 1D was a solid win for the theory. What about higher dimensions? Our world is mostly 3D, after all.
Right. Two dimensions, D2, turned out to be really interesting and tricky. They identified it as the critical dimension.
Critical dimension, meaning things change fundamentally there.
Yeah. The non-linearity, that lambda term, becomes what's called marginally relevant. It means its effect is subtle but crucial, and it messes up the standard calculation methods like perturbation theory.
So the usual math tools struggle in 2D.
Pretty much, and this is where the mapping to the directed polymer problem really saved the day. It provided a different angle, especially for computer simulations.
What did those polymer simulations suggest for 2D?
Well, the numerical studies on 2D polymers pointed towards exponents that were surprisingly close to the 1D values. They found Z around 1.6 and X around 0.5-ish.
Close to Z equals 32 and X equals 12 again.
Exactly. This led to this really exciting, provocative suggestion in the paper. Maybe, just maybe, these exponents X, 12, and Z equals 32 are super universal.
Super universal, meaning they're the same in all dimensions, or at least 1D and 2D.
Potentially, yes. The idea that the fundamental scaling of growth might be independent of dimension, at least below a certain point, was a huge deal. It's still debated and researched heavily today, but the KPZ paper put that possibility firmly on the map.
That's a profound idea, that nature might reuse these exact numbers. What about 3D and higher?
In three dimensions and higher, DO3, things actually simplify again.
Oh, how so?
The nonlinear term all becomes irrelevant in the renormalization group sense. Its effects basically wash out at large scales.
So the complicated nonlinearity becomes less important in higher dimensions.
That's right. So you expect the interface to become essentially smooth at large scales, behaving more like the simpler linear models, like the Edwards-Wilkinson model. The prediction there is Z equal 2.
Okay, so a different universality class kicks in for D3 and up.
Correct. The system flows towards a simpler fixed point, governed by the smoothing term and noise, but not the strong nonlinearity.
It's really amazing how this one equation captures such different behaviors depending on the dimension.
It really is a testament to the power of the framework.
Okay, so let's pull this all together. We've seen the equation, the clever mappings, the scaling exponents across dimensions. What's the big picture takeaway? The paper talks about classifying growth into universality classes.
Right. Essentially, the KPZ equation provides a framework that encompasses three fundamental ways interfaces can grow and roughen.
Three distinct classes.
Yes. First, you have the simplest case, random deposition. This is like setting both the smoothing V and the nonlinearity to zero in the equation. Particles just rain down randomly and stick.
Pure randomness, no interaction.
Exactly. The interface roughness just grows diffusively, like H proportional to the square root of time, T12.
Okay. Class one. Pure random stacking. What's class two?
Class two is the ideal interface, which corresponds to the Edwards-Wilkinson model. Here, you turn off the nonlinearity, but you do have the smoothing term, V.
So random deposition plus smoothing, but no funny lateral growth effects.
Precisely. And this class has its own set of universal exponents, Z2 and X2D2. Different fingerprint.
Got it. Random, then random plus smoothing. And the third class must be?
The big one. The new universality class defined by the full KPZ equation, crucially with that nonlinear term switched on doing its thing.
The one with X who's 12 and Z equals 32, at least in 1D and possibly 2D.
That's the one. Characterized by that specific set of exponents, representing growth dominated by that lateral geometric effect plus noise and smoothing.
So this single equation elegantly ties together these three fundamental modes of growth. That's incredibly powerful.
It is. It provides a concrete theoretical framework. Now, experimentalists can go out, measure the roughness of a real growing surface, like a burning paper edge or a bacterial colony, figure out its X and Z, and see which universality class it falls into.
It gives you categories to put real-world phenomena into.
Exactly. A way to classify the zoo of growth patterns out there.
What an incredible journey today. Mm-hmm. We started with this seemingly simple question, how do things grow at their edges? And ended up with this profound KPZ equation, an equation that links smoke plumes, geological layers, polymer physics, revealing these deep universal patterns governed by just a few exponents. It really shows how theoretical physics can find unity in apparent chaos.
It really does. And it leaves you wondering, doesn't it?
How so?
Well, if these scaling laws, these universality classes, pop up in such different places, fluids, polymers, interfaces. What other processes out there might secretly be described by the same rules? Where else is KPZ universality hiding?
Like, are there economic models or social network growths that follow these patterns?
Who knows? It makes you look at patterns everywhere, rust spreading, cracks forming in mud, maybe even the structure of the cosmic web, and ask, could this be KPZ? What connections are we still missing? It's something to think about next time you see something growing or evolving.
That's a fantastic thought to leave our listeners with. Look for the patterns, look for the universality. Thank you so much for unpacking this landmark paper with us.
My pleasure. It's fascinating stuff.
And thank you all for joining us on the Deep Dive. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and we'll see you next time.